More than 600,000 persons go missing in the United States every year, and approximately 90% of those missing people are recovered every year, either alive or deceased. But what about the other 10%? Join us on a weekly basis with our new segment, Mandy and the Missings, as I go back and look at old cases as well as new cases of missing persons. Because every person, no matter who they are or where they come from, deserves to be remembered and deserves to still have a case open for them and someone trying to find them. Hey there, pond people. Welcome to the first installment of Mandy and the Missings. Tonight, I'm going to be going over a missing persons case that happened back in 1983, so it's been a good while. And this actually happened in Vatican City. And the reason I chose this is because I've always been fascinated by the Vatican. They hold so many secrets that none of us can get to. It's just always something that's, you know, fascinated me. And this story completely, you know, got my attention. So this is about, and also I want to apologize. My Latin and my Italian are very, very weak. So my pronunciations may be a little bit, terrible. But I will do my best. Tonight's story is about Emanuela Orlandi. She was born on January 14th, 1968. She was the fourth of five children of Ercole and Maria Orlandi. Her father was supposed to be an employee of either the Vatican Bank or the papal household. Not too sure about that. It's not very clear. But in any event, the family actually lived inside Vatican City. So with them living there, the kids actually had free run of the Vatican Gardens, which that has to be amazing. Now, Orlandi was in her second year at Liceo Scientifico, which is a high school in Rome, and although the school year had concluded, she was continuing to take flute lessons three times per week at the Tommaso Ludovico de Vittoria School, connected with the Pontifical Institute of Sacred Music. She was also a part of the church of, she was also part of the choir of the church of Santa Anna dei Palafrenieri, in the Vatican. Now, for her lessons, she usually just traveled to school by the bus. She'd get off the bus after a few stops and then walk, you know, the short distance it was to the school. But on Wednesday, June 22nd, 1983, she was late to class. She had asked Pietro to ride on the bus to class, but he had other commitments. Later that day, Emanuela called home. She was speaking to one of her sisters. And after that phone call, there has been no trace of her whatsoever. Italian investigators haven't been able to reach a conclusion about what happened to her. So, I mean, it's a complete disappearance, like absolutely no clue left over whatsoever. She had explained her tardiness in a telephone conversation with her sister, stating that she had received a job offer from a representative of Avon Cosmetics, which I didn't know was even in Rome. It's interesting. Her sister suggested she talk it over with their parents before, of course, making any decisions. And according to some reports that I've read on the internet, she allegedly met with the Avon rep shortly before her music lesson. And at the end of the lesson, she spoke of the job offer with one of her friends, who then left her at the bus stop in the company of another girl. Now, Orlandi was allegedly last seen getting into a large, dark-colored BMW. And then I guess the trail goes cold from there. Now, as far as the chronology of the event, at 3 o'clock on June 23rd, which is a Thursday, Orlandi's parents called the director of the music school to ask if their daughter's classmates had any information as to where she could be. The police had suggested waiting because, you know, maybe she was just with her friends or out doing something and she would eventually, you know, come home. Now, over the next 2 days, announcements of the disappearance were published with the telephone number of the Orlandi house in the newspapers. At 6 o'clock on June 25th, which was Saturday, a phone call was received from a younger person who claimed to be a 16-year-old boy named Pierluigi. He reported that he and his fiancée had met the missing girl in Piazza Navona that afternoon, and the young man had mentioned Orlandi's flute, her hair, and the glasses that the girl didn't like to wear, along with other details that fit the missing girl. Now, according to him, Orlandi had just had a haircut and had introduced herself as Barbarella. He claimed that she stated she had just run away from home and was selling Avon products. That in and of itself seems very bizarre. Now, on June 28th, a man calling himself Mario called the family and claimed to own a bar near Ponte Vittorio between the Vatican and the music school. The man said that a girl called Barbara, who was a new customer, had confided to him about being a fugitive from home, but said that she would return home for her sister's wedding. Now, on June 30th, Rome was completely plastered with 3,000 posters displaying Orlandi's photograph. On Sunday, July 3rd, Pope John Paul II, during the Angelus, appealed to those responsible for Orlandi's disappearance, making the hypothesis of kidnapping official for the first time. 2 days later, the Orlandi family received the first of a number of anonymous phone calls. Emanuela was supposedly the prisoner of a terrorist group, demanding the release of Mehmet Ali Agha, who was a Turkish man who shot the Pope in May 1981. No other information was given. In the following days, other calls were received, including one from a man identified as the American, due to his apparent accent, who played a recording of Orlandi's voice over the phone. A few hours later, in another phone call to the Vatican, the same man suggested an exchange of Orlandi for Agca. The anonymous interpolator mentioned the Mario and Pierluigi of the earlier phone calls, defining them as members of the organization. Now, on July 6th, a man with a young voice and an American accent informed the ANSA news agency of the demand for an Orlandi Agca exchange, asking for the Pope's participation within 20 days and indicating that a basket in the public square near Parliament would contain proof that Orlandi was indeed in his hands. These were to have been photocopies of her music school ID, a receipt, a note that was handwritten by the kidnapped girl. But the magistrate who was overseeing Orlandi's case didn't believe that there was credible connection between Orlandi's abduction and the Pope's assailant. That's a shocker. On July 8th, a man with an alleged Middle Eastern accent phoned one of Orlandi's classmates saying Orlandi was in his hands and that they had 20 days to make the exchange with Agca. The man also asked for a direct telephone line with what was then State Agostino Casseroli. The line was installed on July 18th. A total of 16 telephone calls were made by quote-unquote the American from different public telephone booths. Now, on the morning of May 14th, 2001, the parish priest of the Gregory the Seventh Church near the Vatican discovered a human skull. Looks like it was small dimensions and lacking a jaw in a bag with an image of Padre Pio in a confessional. It's not been officially identified as Orlandi's skull. Emanuela's father, Ercole, died in 2004, a month after giving his last interview. That is horrible. That's horrible to have to die without knowing what happened to your kid. Over the years, obviously, there's been a few theories regarding different motives and everything that the Italian press, of course, has latched onto. First one, obviously, is this Orlandi Agca connection theory. And again, Agca was a Bulgarian agent of the Grey Wolves, which was a Turkish ultra-nationalist, neo-fascist youth organization. That's awesome. Now, Agca actually gave an interview from jail stating that the girl was alive and not in danger and living in a cloistered convent. He denied any direct knowledge of the girl's fate, though he did say that he had made some logical deductions. But there wasn't any evidence to support these claims, so the case was closed in July of 1997. In mid-2000, doesn't give a specific date, Judge Ferdinando Impasimato, based on what he had learned about the Grey Wolves, declared that Orlandi, by then an adult, was living a perfectly integrated life in the Muslim community and that she had probably lived for a long time in Paris. He remains the only supporter of this idea and of the Orlandi Agca connection. In a letter published in 2006, Agca claimed that Emanuela Orlandi and another girl, both of whom vanished in 1983, they were abducted as part of a plan to secure his release from prison. He claimed that the girls were whisked away to a royal palace in Liechtenstein. Agca was temporarily released from an Istanbul prison after serving 25 years in Italy and Turkey for the murder of Abdi Epeki, who was a prominent Turkish journalist. But he was quickly imprisoned again. The release turned out to be a mistake. But he was permanently released from a Turkish prison in January of 2010. From the sound of this guy, it sounds like he needs to be in prison for the rest of his life, but not my call to make. Another theory was organized crime. In 2011, the former Banda della Magliana member Antonio Mancini implied that Orlandi's kidnapping was one of a number of strikes that the gang was making against the Vatican in order to force the restitution of large amounts of money that they had lent to the Vatican Bank. On May 14, 2012, Italian police opened the tomb of gangster Enrico Depiti and took DNA samples. An anonymous call to an Italian television program in 2005 said it contained evidence that would help the police explain Orlandi's disappearance. So the tomb was opened, DNA was taken, but there were no clues found in the tomb linking Depiti to Emanuela. Now there's a third theory. Some might say might be a little bit more credible, but again, we don't know. In May of 2012, when interest in the case was renewed, leading police to search the Depiti tomb, then 85-year-old exorcist Father Gabriel Amorth claimed that Orlandi was kidnapped by a member of the Vatican police for sex parties and then murdered. Amorth claimed that officials of an unnamed foreign embassy were involved as well. It's an odd case because, you know, there's tons of security and police and cameras and everything around Vatican City because, you know, the Pope has to be completely protected at all times. How one person can disappear without a single trace in this particularly small area of the world is completely baffling to me. I just don't understand it at all. One thing I did find a little bit surprising is that on July 10th, 2019, the Vatican announced that they'd be opening two tombs inside Vatican City, which would then be examined by forensic anthropologist Giovanni Arcudi. The tombs were the Tomb of the Angel, meant to contain the remains of Princess Sophie Hohenlohe Waldenburg Bartenstein, and the adjacent one, which was meant to contain the remains of Duchess Charlotte Frederica of Mecklenburg-Schwerin. The exhumations took place on July 11, 2019. Neither Emanuela's body nor the bodies of the two princesses said to be buried there were found. The Vatican is currently conducting an investigation into the whereabouts of the princesses' remains. So now we got three missing girls. You know, two, of course, who knows? Who knows about those? But that had to be kind of a big major embarrassment for the Vatican to open up the tomb of two princesses and, oops, they're not there anymore. But this is still an ongoing case. Unfortunately, no leads have been uncovered. Nobody has heard or seen anything. And it's just a very, very disturbing to me. Like I said, nothing was seen in a city as small as Vatican City. My thoughts and prayers go out to the Orlandi family in hopes that one day this tragic mystery will soon reveal itself. Thank you for listening to Mandy and the Missings. Join me next week as I go over another unsolved missing persons case.